Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Roll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today. Ethan Sherwood Strauss, my closer, just like Andre Iguodala. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. I'm a little worried that as a closer, I'm experiencing a bit of fatigue, Zach. I'm really worried that my arm is going to give out, that I'm just going to give up home run after home run, as I was up quite late after an exciting Warriors victory, and I watched a game this morning, and I'm just running on fumes, man. How you doing?
I'm good. I had a good night. I went and saw Mr. Dave Chappelle.
Wow.
He talked at a crowd for a few hours, and I was part of that crowd, and that was great. And I watched the second half of the exciting Warriors game, the great comeback by the Thunder, and then, you know, Andre Iguodala's unlikely game-winning shot. I don't know how to describe it.
Oh, they had it the whole way, Zach. Utter confidence, total confidence with those 2.3 seconds in the Oracle crowd and the Warriors huddle. Everybody was feeling great after giving up a 14-point lead in the fourth quarter.
Why would he be the option?
I don't know. I don't know, man.
Didn't Mark Jackson say, he was our guy the whole way? Is that just something you say?
Mark Jackson espouses a lot of confidence and does a lot of quirky things, and I don't quite get it because I rewatched that play a few times, and they didn't even really run anything. He just sort of juked Cephalosha out of the way and then ran to the corner. And then the weird part about it is that Iguodala could have, at that moment, it seemed, driven for a layup. And Serge Ibaka was guarding the inbounds pass, so he wasn't down there. And he had the angle, and it was really the worst possible decision, I think, to then do
shoot a fadeaway shot in the corner.
It looked beautiful when it went in.
Oh, it looked great when it went in. It was a little funny just because, you know, we're all analysts on Twitter, so people start, like, diagramming the play and everything, and it's like, well, you can see the action here, tricked it. I'm like, I don't know, it just looked like he got open.
Yeah, and then Steph Curry was just standing in the corner on the other side as a decoy. That was strange.
So I guess they did want him to win. I just feel like that's weird. You have Klay Thompson, you have Steph Curry. I know Curry wasn't shooting well to end that game, but you have both those guys, and you're like, all right, Iguodala, we're going to run this play for you. And not that he's bad or anything, and I don't know what his clutch numbers are over his career, but it's a weird decision to me. It worked out, though.
It totally worked out, but it was this tangled ball of what? Because the explanation was that they'd be so focused on Curry that you'd want to go to Iguodala, but they weren't really running a play that took advantage of people caring about Curry or caring about Klay Thompson. And then, adding on top of that, I believe it was Thabo Cephalosha who was guarding Andre Iguodala. That's not a great situation to have the best defender on your not best offensive player and target that. Maybe Mark Jackson's just a mad genius, and we can't question these things, but this is certainly it looks like an example of the result trumping process.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that, I mean, I think like Thabo is their best wing defender, but I would say I would be more worried about the guy Durant was guarding, but I would also want Durant guarding the inbound because he's a wacky inflatable arm flailing tube man. Like his his limbs are just so long and he's so tall that he would be the guy that I want guarding the inbound. Just, I don't know, it seems like that would be the most distracting.
Yeah, it's almost as though you should go with the guy who is of equivalent height but not as good at guarding the rim to guard the inbounds play.
Yes.
That seems to be the smart idea. But maybe Scott Brooks has his reasons. I believe we've been saying that for a few years now for a lot of questionable decisions.
I felt like
he has his reasons.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the Iguodala shot. It was cool. But I did really want them to win on just an awful, awful Russell Westbrook pull up three. That was such a great shot for me personally that I was disappointed that Iguodala hit the shot just because, you know, it's a horrible shot to take if you're Westbrook, and he just knocked it down cold. It was perfect.
Oh, everything was going in for that guy that night. It was just a bunch of switches. I loved that moment, man. I loved both moments. It was so enjoyable. I know a lot of people in the crowd would say that they didn't like that Westbrook shot and how it made them feel, but I think that's the second best feeling in sports. I really do. I think the first best feeling is the feeling of victory and triumph, and the second best feeling is that searing pain that you probably had as a 49er fan in that Ravens Super Bowl game, where it's an awful feeling, but there's just such clarity in that. You're just not feeling anything else at that moment but that. And I think that's what we're seeking out from sports. Ultimately, we just want to experience something and be totally transported. And if that's misery, I think we kind of like the misery.
I don't know that I like the misery. I like feeling good.
controversial stance.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I like misery. I like that in terms of the Super Bowl, I liked that they had a shot. You know, like they played like crap in the first half and then the lights went out and then everything came back on and they made a huge run and they had a shot to win it. And I think that's sometimes like all you can hope for is like, let's just have a shot to win it and then see what happens. And I think that's maybe the feeling that I would take away from what you're saying is like, if your team has a shot to win it and it doesn't work out, well, at least it was fun, right?
I can't get with you on that. I like the pain. I like it. I really enjoy it. I've come to embrace it. I think you're better for it on the other end of it. I don't need any of this sort of rationalization, Zach, of they had a shot and all I wanted was them to have a shot. No, I just want to be kicked in the stomach. I like it.
I feel like you want...
Tie me up. Now, hit me with some whips.
Now I feel like, well, this is the Ion Basketball After Dark podcast now. I feel like you would probably rather... the misery than the victory, because I think you were happier 2 years ago when this Warriors team was bad and you could just spew all of your venom towards them and towards the process and towards, you know, the...
Oh, it was so much easier to feel correct because ultimately you could condescend to the team as the team was a failure.
Now you're calling them the best team in basketball. You're caping up.
At the moment, I don't know.
Really? It's not the 8-0 Pacers that are destroying everybody?
Well, the 8-0 Pacers kind of aren't playing anybody either. There's that too. They've had an incredibly soft schedule so far. Softer than it seemed at the beginning of the season, in part because teams like Chicago and Brooklyn, the East in general, it might not be as good.
Yeah, they didn't have to go through that crazy stretch of playing the Kings and the Lakers and the Sixers. I mean, the Warriors really fought through that one. I mean, the fact that they came out with a winning record is
hey, I'm
unreal.
Not saying that the Warriors have had an especially difficult schedule. It has been more difficult than the Pacers' schedule, but it hasn't been as bad as, say, and why am I making this comparison? Why am I being defensive with you, Zach? I know your game.
Let me tell you this. There's six wins right now for the Warriors.
Uh-huh.
Those wins have come against... The Clippers? Or no, I'm sorry. The Lakers, not the Clippers. They lost the Clippers. They come against the Lakers, the Kings, the Sixers, the Timberwolves, the Pistons, and the Thunder. That's two.
You hating on your Timberwolves?
No, it's two quality wins. They beat the Timberwolves in Minnesota. That's a quality win.
Kind of blew the Timberwolves out at home. I think that's where it's...
I'm confused by this notion that they blew out the Timberwolves.
Well, it was close to. It wasn't. We need a word for that. We need a word for a game that isn't close, but isn't a blowout.
Yeah, I think people see a double-digit victory and they're like, "Oh, they blew them out." That's not really what happened.
Could it be a doubler? That sort of sounds like a British term.
They had a convincing victory, but it wasn't a blowout by any means.
Doubler sounds like when they say a derby. I watched something.
Sure.
I watched something called a derby. I guess that's when. In soccer, when people from the or teams from the same area play each other. I watched a Welsh derby recently. So, derby would
work. My parents had a Welsh derby that had hip dysplasia.
Oh, it's very, very, very sad to hear that.
This was an 8-point game with 10:50 left in the fourth quarter. That's a blowout?
No, and this is why we need a new word for it.
All right, they had a convincing victory. They controlled the game.
We've got a woefully inadequate vocabulary. They did control the game, and that is impressive when you're on the road.
Here are the Pacers' quality wins. Against the Pelicans, who you love.
I do not love the Pelicans.
You kind of love the Pelicans. Against the Bulls, it's a quality victory. In Brooklyn and against the Grizzlies.
Well, wait, the Bulls, that was at home, and the Bulls, at least in my opinion and so far, with Derrick Rose using the saboteur word again, but Derrick Rose being an accidental saboteur because of his various injuries and being a 5 PER guy or whatever he is right now, I don't I guess that's an okay win, but if we're just looking at what the Bulls have done this season and not thinking about them as the scrappy team that you have to give everything you got to beat, I don't know that's a great win.
Yeah, I mean, they're 500.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let me see this. Hey, this is fair. You're looking at the schedule. I'm not looking at the schedule right now. How many of these teams they beat have a positive point differential this, you know, this far into the season? Answer me that, Harper.
Of the teams that they've beaten?
Yeah.
Well, maybe not many. The Bulls have a positive differential. I bet you didn't know that.
I did know that. Don't you condescend to me.
Toronto has a positive differential. They beat Toronto, so that's a quality win.
Oh, yes, of course. Toronto's a very
tall. You asked about positive differential. The Magic have a positive differential. Beat them.
Whoa. No, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Now I'm learning something. That's
here's what the conclusion I think we can agree on.
Yes.
The Pacers have 8 quality wins to the Warriors 2.
How many of these teams are over 500 they beat? Answer me that.
Over 500? I mean, I don't know that we need to get into record at this point so early in the season.
I believe the answer is none.
No, that's not true. They'd be none. I don't. Somebody's over 500. The Raptors.
Who's this over 500 team?
I mean, I guess we can pretend that the Warriors win over the Sixers is a quality win.
Hey, man, they were viewed as indomitable before.
Were they?
They were viewed.
Were they, or at, was it? Oh, maybe they'll have to. Maybe teams will have to try against them this year. I guess that's indomitable.
I love how everybody forgot about the belt or whatever the belt is.
Yeah, that lasted 8 days.
Nobody wants to keep track of it.
No.
It's a long season.
No.
It's too much work.
Oh, it's like 170 days of keeping track of it. Nobody wants that.
It's too much work, and the teams themselves don't care.
You're right.
The belt was lost when the Heat said, we could play Dwayne Wade, but meh.
It's a cool idea. It's like when I'm like, the season starts, and I think, I'm going to track deflections. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna see how many deflections guys on the Wolves get. And then three games in, I'm like, I don't really want to do this anymore.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's not very rewarding.
No, there's no gain from it.
Yeah, you're not going to impress anybody at a cocktail party with that.
No.
I don't know who goes to a cocktail party.
They don't have those anymore, do they? like a black tie party?
Only in a sort of ironic retro sense, the way people have Mad Men parties where they like to dress up like that, but they don't really want that to be the reality.
Or like a charity event, they'll say, oh, a black tie event, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that's the only thing. Like, no one, your friends wouldn't just say, hey, let's have a black tie party tonight.
No. Certainly not, God, what's the word I'm looking for? Spontaneous. That's a weird way to go about it. Like those Ciroc ads where everybody's just having the biggest party in the world with Diddy and Aaron Paul. I've already almost forgot about that guy's name now that show's over because I don't.
Oh, you didn't watch Need for Speed or whatever that movie is that he's got coming out? Maybe it came out already. I don't know.
I haven't watched that. I haven't really checked that out. I'm looking at this. I can't find an over 500 team. This is great radio/podcast material of us looking this up and trying to figure out which is an over 500 team. No, not even Memphis. I believe every single team that the Pacers have beaten, every single one of them, aren't over 500.
Here's the thing. If these teams hadn't lost to the Pacers, if they'd beaten them, they'd be over 500. They're keeping teams under 500. That's how good they are.
My brain just exploded. All don't know how to handle that. Look. I love the Pacers.
No, you're caping up for your boys. I get it.
I love the Pacers. I really do. I just need to see a little bit more. They are the best defensive team in basketball, the Pacers are.
Yeah.
That is without question.
It's not even close.
I can't see another team getting better at defense. That combo of Hibbert and George with one guy shoring up the perimeter and getting around every screen. And I love how Hibbert never leaves the basket area. I'm always quoting Haralambos Vulgaris. He always says something interesting on Twitter. But he pointed out there was a moment in last night's Warriors game where Bogut left to help. He left to help in a situation. And in the opinion of Mr. Vulgaris, that's an overrated thing to do. Why even bother? Right. Why even bother? You're just you're big, you're lumbering, you're running out there out of a sense of duty and responsibility. You're but
taking,
you're not going to help.
You're taking yourself away from a rebounding opportunity.
Exactly. And just dare them to come to you. You're open out there. Take your shot or drive at me and come to me.
Right.
That's preferable to me running out because you're open and I feel a need to cover up for it and you just blowing right by me. And he pointed out that Hibbert would never do that. The Pacers are very disciplined. It's this whole idea of you defend your man. They keep it brilliantly simple. You know, I just
it's a lot like what the Bulls do. I you know, like, I don't feel like Thibodeau's system is that complicated.
I wish I knew. I wish I could.
There's some analysis.
I wish I knew more because I just remember Zach Lowe writing in detail about the Bulls system, and now I just feel stupid because it seemed complicated to me, Zach. Now I'm feeling very insecure. I'm feeling insecure because the Bulls system.
You've been around as long as I have. These are a dime a dozen.
You know a Bulls system when you see
one. I know a Bulls system when I see one. The Warriors are 4 points better on offense per 100 possessions than than the Pacers, which is impressive. But the Pacers are 6.6 better on defense.
Against not a single team better than 500.
They give up 89.5 points per 100 possessions.
They're great. They're great. Hey, look,
undefeated.
They are a legit title contender.
King of the team. King of the league right now. They've got the belt.
Yes, they've got the real belt as far as that. They really embrace it too, man. They are very excited about this season.
They want a game seven on their home floor.
I don't know if that's a good thing for them to be so into it at this juncture, but maybe nobody's just ever been this vocal before.
Yeah, I mean, I guess somebody will freak out that I compared these two teams, but any intelligent person won't worry about it. But it feels like the 96 Bulls in the sense that they kind of went out there saying we want to win every game. And there's a difference between saying wanting to win every game
Did
and going
out. Did you just compare Roy Hibbert to Will Perdue, you jackass?
No, I'm saying
imagining the reaction.
I'm saying Roy Hibbert is the Scottie Pippen of this team.
Oh, yes. Okay. That makes sense.
And Paul George is clearly Michael Jordan. And I guess that would make Lance Stephenson Dennis Rodman?
I thought that Paul George was Dennis Rodman.
Oh, Lance Stephenson is Michael Jordan? Did you just compare Lance Stephenson and Michael Jordan?
Yes. They're pretty much the same player. Well, the way people are talking about Lance Stephenson, my word, my God.
Yeah, I mean, he's playing well, but let's calm down. It's cool he had a triple-double, but...
I don't know what to believe anymore. We've made fun of his dribbling, and suddenly, just like Paul George, he looks like the professor out there. He's doing AM1 mixtape stuff out there. How did that happen? I need to know how the Indiana Pacers are secretly turning guys who can't dribble and the guys who can dribble. I need to know that, and I need to tell Harrison Barnes.
Sure.
Or I just need somebody to tell Harrison Barnes. I mean, I just wonder, how does that happen? What drills do you do that you go from having a shaky handle to having, as you say about Kyrie Irving, a yo-yo?
Sounds
vaguely racial. I don't know how I feel about that.
Wow, it feels racial?
Yeah, just a little bit.
How?
I don't know. It just does.
That doesn't make any sense. The fact that you said that is racial.
No, it's different.
You know what's
different.
Funny is racial isn't a bad word.
No,
it's not. It's not an insult. Like racist, obviously.
That's not inherently pejorative. No.
Yeah. I think that you work on your dribbling by dribbling.
This is the second time that my brain has exploded all over my keyboard.
That's what you do. You dribble two basketballs at once. You do all kinds of inside out, you know, switch of hand stuff. That's how you improve your dribbling. It's just dribbling drills. It's just you have to do it. You have to put in the time to do it.
Yeah, it's probably a little like free throws, though. I think Barnes was saying this last time I was at practice, where he worked on his dribbling and his handle this offseason, but it's a different matter when the lights are on and you might revert to whatever's most comfortable. And that's an issue. I mean, this sounds cruel, but... When Barnes, who had a really good game last night, but the game before, he was trying to run the offense. He was almost their de facto point guard because Tony Douglas is out with an injury, and he split a double team. And as he was trying to split the double team, I just instantly in my mind's eye saw myself when I have a crinkly dollar bill and I'm trying to force it through the vending machine ever so deliberately with shaky hands. It was just, he sort of...
Do you get nervous during that situation? During a vending machine?
I just get grandma hands. I don't know what happens.
Grandma hands. I'm always worried I'm going to punch up the wrong number. I'm not worried about the dollar bill. I'll put a dollar bill in there all day.
Really? That's some confidence. I'd like to see you back it up. I'd like to see you back it up under the bright lights.
Are you kidding me? I'll flatten a dollar bill and put it in a vending machine all day long. That's me pulling up from 25 feet. I'm confident in that. But you give me, you know when you have a breakaway layup and you just feel like, oh, I can't screw this up, and then...
Thrombocephalosia.
Yeah, exactly. That's me trying to pick out D4 to get that bag of Cheetos.
I mean, maybe you have bad number memory. Maybe that's what it is. This is a very odd problem.
I think it's just second-guessing myself. Did I see it correctly? I'm thinking too much out there.
Yeah, you like the crinkle. The crinkle gives you a job. And then you just, all you can do is screw it up, and that's when it goes bad.
Because you're just reacting. You're just reacting to the stateliness of the dollar bill, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're reacting to. So you're just moving in and out, trying to figure it out. But with you punching up numbers, this is something like you have to, there is no reaction. This is a thought process.
Do you find any comfort in that moment of the crinkly dollar bill and trying to get it through, that it says, "In God we trust"? Does that give you some sort of... I know the athletes always look to the Lord. Does that give you a little reminder that helps you have the confidence?
I'm always trying to figure out what that pyramid thing is.
Yeah, it's staring at you with
the eye. Yeah, I start wondering, like, did I go to Egypt and get some money? Like, I don't understand. Is that even on their money? Do they just have pictures of, like, our buildings? Like, I don't get it.
Colonized by aliens is what those dollars look like.
I just don't get it. I don't understand why we'd have a pyramid on there. And I'm sure someone's going to respond to the podcast and tell me. And
it looks like we voted for Konos.
Sure.
I'm sure there's a logical reason for it, but
have you seen those
right
new
now,
hundreds?
Barnes doesn't have that facility with the dollar bill.
Those new hundreds?
No, I'm a blogger. I don't see that kind of money.
Oh, wow. What can I say? No, I saw one of those new hundreds.
Yes, money. I'm not getting residuals from the from Two Broke Girls. I don't see it.
I mean, have you been watching? It's just a good time for the family. It's a great time for the family, but the new hundreds, it looks like we're going towards the euro.
Really,
it's very European looking. There's a blue stripe down part of it. It looks very foreign.
Dignitary on it.
What?
There's a Prussian dignitary.
There is a Prussian dignitary. They got those funky buildings from Moscow in it. It's great.
Got those weird kind of autumn colors. I feel like every euro dollar bill, it looks autumnal to me. Those
sure.
Heads, you know?
It looks a little bit like those blue American Express cards. That's got like that blue thing in the middle. That's what it feels like. Like that's the color, it seems.
Totally different direction. It's a totally different direction.
Yeah.
Than I was anticipating.
So back to Harrison Barnes dribbling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I want him to do that.
You want him to learn like Lance Stevenson did.
Fine mortar skills now. Gimme. Chop, chop. Get it done. No excuses. The Warriors say they're no excuses basketball team. Well, come on. Get this fixed now.
You got to stop this Jermaine O'Neal in the post thing.
Oh, but it's so funny. It's so funny for everybody to tune in to what they think is some basketball porn and the Splash Brothers, and we're going to have a great time. And, oh, the ball flying around, so many deep three-pointers, and hold it up, we need Jermaine O'Neal in the post, we need a little bit of that, and maybe some Maurice Spates euro steps just thrown in there. You know, we need this kind of ugly disaster of a bench unit to remind ourselves of the difference between that and the thing that's so fun for us. It's a reminder.
I'd much rather see Kuzmich out there. What is Kuzmich's first name? Because I see a lot of letters together that I can't make sense of.
Yeah, it's some sort of consonant pileup.
Yeah,
like you took one of our names are good. Now I just sound like the cop in Harold and Kumar. Is that, you know, with two U's, a couple of O's, Kumar? What kind of name is that?
It's weird that you know that movie well enough to reference it.
It's a great movie. I just think that.
I don't know. It's great. This is, oh yeah. All right. It's.
Oh, you're one to talk. You're one to talk.
All right. This needs to stop. Just because I watch bad movies doesn't mean I can't tell what is a bad movie and what isn't. If anything, I'm more of an expert than anybody. Because I watch them all the time, so I know what I know when I'm watching crap. Harold and Kumar is just not that good to me, and maybe it's because I'm not a pothead. But it's like it's just not that fun. Like I don't need bathroom humor. Like I got over bathroom humor. Like I think the last bathroom humor I laughed at was in Dumb and Dumber.
And then, I'm so worried because I know that your listeners, they just crave basketball talk and that they're going to blame me.
We'll get there.
But I have to go on this jag. It's a great movie. It's a great movie because so many movies have been about the white protagonist. And this movie sets up a misdirection where it looks like it's going to be about the white frat boys. It's told from their perspective at the beginning, and then you completely shift to the other guys and the guys that movies usually don't feature, this Asian American dude and this Indian American guy, and it's just very focused on their journey.
There's no way you turn on the movie Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle and think that it's going to be about a white person.
It's got white in the name, Zach. I'm from California. I don't know what White Castle is.
I know they have them here. I still have never been to one. And if you tell someone here that you haven't been to White Castle, they freak out.
Really?
It's like telling someone you haven't seen the new $100 bill. They freak out.
I'm glad that you really contained your reaction.
Yeah.
You're freaking out about the $100 bill.
Well, you should have seen me. If we were on a video cast, I was throwing my hands everywhere. I threw the dog across the room. It was a mess. No, I feel like Harold and Kumar, it's better than this, but it's a lot like when people talk so highly about Billy Madison. Billy Madison's a terrible movie, and it's not funny.
Well, that's a whole different dynamic.
I'm saying it's different, but I feel like it's that same reaction that people give to it. It's Harold and Kumar is a much funnier and a much better movie than Billy Madison, but Billy Madison sucks.
Well, and I just need to throw in some random basketball player names just to – like him. So Billy Madison, it's a totally different dynamic, Reggie Jackson, because it's one of those movies that a lot of people saw when they were 11 or 12 years old, and their sense of humor has evolved since then, but they recall loving it at that particular moment. So
this is like when people try to say that
Chandler Parsons.
No, this This is like when people try to say that Space Jam's good.
I was just thinking that. You read my mind.
Yeah.
They put that 30 for 30, that fake 30 for 30 out about Space Jam. And
that's the most entertained I've ever been about that movie.
Because it does convey finally, subtly, how awful that movie is and how ridiculous it is and how it seems as though the people who wrote it must have been on drugs that have to be illegal in multiple states, multiple countries, and maybe even multiple galaxies. That movie is awful. And no, it's not that they were going for the absurdity. It's just I remember being a camp counselor back when I was 18 years old for a summer camp, and you show the kids a movie, and they put on Space Jam, and the other movies that we see, you watch A Little Giants, and you like it. It's pretty good. Hey, that's entertaining. I was worried that their minds were warped when we were watching Space Jam. I was worried about the damage we were doing to their brains when we were watching Space Jam.
Yeah. It's I was arguing about this with friends last night. It's just not good.
Oh, God. What's their argument? Sit them down. Sit them down like the electric chair. Strap them in.
Wow. No, the argument was... it's Michael Jordan playing basketball with Looney Tunes. I'm like, yep, that sounds...
I was saying make them watch the movie. Make them, as a mature adult, watch the movie and tell you that movie's good.
Yeah, and then like one of my friends like, Wayne Knight's in it. I'm like, what the hell? Come on.
Yeah, because he's worked so much since then. The guy everybody remembers from Jurassic Park and Seinfeld and nothing else has done so much since that movie. I mean... There are also some odd things going on in there that I don't know are intentional. Some weird racial things. We're using that racial word again. That isn't the best. I mean, are we just okay with Michael Jordan's freedom being on the line? Him playing for his literal freedom? That doesn't strike anybody.
That was a little uncomfortable now that I think about it.
Yeah, and there's even a little flash forward or an imagined scene of what it's going to look like when he's enslaved. You couldn't have it now.
No,
you know, pre-internet existing, I guess it would sort of fly by the wayside, but back then, not so much. My favorite part, and we've discussed this though, and it does speak to how unfazed and how clutch and how Michael Jordan would have nailed that jumper that Iguodala also nailed. My favorite moment is when he is on a golf course in the real world and he gets pulled through it. He gets pulled through a golf hole, his whole body. He pops out on the other side in a Looney Tune land, and he's completely unfazed. He's just, what? You want me to play? You want me to play in a big game? Sure, let's do it. I'm a competitor.
LeBron wouldn't have been able to do that.
No. LeBron would have totally choked right there.
Right.
And by choked, I mean, really maybe he had a seizure. A normal person would have. Because you've just been pulled through a golf ball hole into a cartoon universe and you have Bugs Bunny asking you to play a game on his behalf.
Yeah, it's... Well, and... I mean, they make a little bit of light of this and acknowledge it, but just like... You've got, I think, Wayne Knight, Larry Bird, and Bill Murray all standing around. They're just like, oh, he just got pulled into a golf hole. Like, I guess that's something. Like, no one worried about that?
Nope, not at all.
Yeah.
Happens all the time. You know, it's just this whole thing they invented where there's a moron mountain and they need to keep the Looney Tune people, you know, in a zoo.
They took Sean Bradley's powers of being tall. Is that a power? Or is that just a growth defect?
That's a power. I think that's a very good point.
That's a growth defect. That's what that is. Like, he's defective.
Poor Sean Bradley.
Yeah.
Poor Sean Bradley. Did you check out the Rockets Knicks game, by the way?
I did. No, I actually wanted to get to that because one, I love me some mellow cooking.
Oh yeah. Oh dude, this was. Oh god, this is. I want to do a little game, a little segment, but I'm just gonna jump in now. I wanted things that Zach feels smug about.
Yeah.
And one of them would certainly be one of your unfavorites, Terrence Jones, one of those guys that you poo-pooed in the draft and said looked like a worse version of Josh Smith. And hey, it looks like you were correct. Getting absolutely destroyed by one of your faves, Carmelo Anthony. That had to make you feel happy.
Maybe feel a little good, which is. I don't know. That's kind of a prickish thing to feel, but I did. Like, I love seeing...
He kicked a homeless person, Terrence Jones.
Yeah,
did,
yeah, so. Exactly. Like, he allegedly kicked a homeless person, and so if that happened, that's... He's definitely dead to me. I'm not gonna allow that in my house.
it'd be very difficult because you'd have the homeless person living in your house, which take away his distinction. And then kick? Yeah, it'd be a lot.
Yeah. Melo was just like abusive. Like it was almost, I almost felt bad for Terrence Jones at one point, but seeing him cook like that, I've put up with so much crap for defending Melo over the years.
Oh, you love it. You love being on the vanguard of Melo defense.
I would rather people accept him.
You love being the William Wallace of the Melo lovers.
I love being the William Wallace of John Wall.
Yeah.
Of non-Wizards fans, John Wall. That's who I love being the William Wallace of, but everything else, like, no, I don't want to. I want everyone to accept Melo. Melo's great. Like, yeah, does Melo have problems? Absolutely. But he's just a great player to watch. I love him.
Oh, he's a lot of fun to watch. And I have relented. I've said negative things about Melo, and I've toned it down. It was a beautiful thing to watch last night, and it's sad that the Knicks are so talent they're so talent deprived at this juncture that kind of performance couldn't get them to victory.
They're kind of in a bad spot right now. I actually think they'll be fine, but they're in a bad spot.
Because the entire Eastern Conference is the worst thing in the world, but continue.
What did you think of the foul call at the end? Did you think that should have counted?
I I don't know if it should have counted by the letter of the rules. But
do you think that? I think sometimes it's such an incredible shot they should just be like, "All right, you get a
yes, pass." Yes. There was also a shot last night where Steph Curry was intentionally fouled.
Yes.
I think it was at the end of the half, and he just threw up some sort of junk shot, and it went in. And it's, hey, if they're trying to foul the guy and do that whole foul to give thing, there should be more continuation leeway, I think. You have to take that risk, because I don't like the foul to give. I don't like it. Maybe we should have this new rule where if you do it the way they did for Melo, where it's outside the 3-point arc, then it should count for three shots. I would prefer that, because that's boring, and there's something I don't want to say unmanly, because we're in a post Damon Bruce world where or I don't want to sound like that, but there's almost, by the rules, there's something undignified about that, about not just guarding a shot and trying to prevent a guy from getting a shot. I don't like how the two free throws instead of allowing a three-pointer thing, I just don't like it. I don't want it to exist.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think by the letter of the law, it was the correct call.
Yes,
because he clearly fouls him before Melo gains possession, or maybe that causes Melo to lose possession of the ball. It's kind of bang bang in that sense, and then he recovers as Harden is fouling him again and hits the shot. But if they're calling that initial swipe down, which I believe they are, you know, it's technically correct, but I don't know. I feel like you got to give it to him.
I would have preferred that they had.
It's so close that I just wouldn't have. I mean, some people would freak out like and say, "Oh, the league's trying to save the Knicks and all this crap," but
even more entertaining.
Sure,
this is not life and death. I know that we need to have rules interpreted by the letter overall, and I won't complain when it happens. I won't complain when they call a guy for an illegal screen on a last second play if it was an illegal screen. I'm fine with that. I get it. But I'm not going to take it seriously if we err towards the side of entertainment and the ref goes with the more entertaining option. This is ultimately meant to entertain us. These are fun and games. It's not serious. So hell yeah, I wanted that to count, and I wouldn't have complained had it been.
Yeah, Do you still feel like do you feel like they were screwed? The Knicks were screwed a little bit? Or is this just this is what we wish would happen?
They were more screwed on that James Harden fouled three-pointer.
Yeah, that was bad.
Where it's, again, James Harden. Have you heard of him, refs? Do you know that he flops? Is this something that you really need to be like, oh, well, yeah, he got clobbered. Like, who's really thinking that when they watch James Harden play? And on a play that big, a possession that large, I was just surprised by that call. And we focus at whatever happens at the end, but that, to me, was more egregious and impacted the game a whole hell of a lot.
Yeah, that was and then Melo even said after the game that, you know, he would like some of the calls that James Harden gets. And it is kind of weird how you get this reputation and yet it seems oblivious to the referees. And maybe that's how it should be.
You know what I think it is? I don't think you need to do a whole lot.
I don't think they should.
The blur of action to sell a call, but not everybody can do that thing to sell a call. James Harden whips his head back whenever he's in a scrum, and that makes it look like he's just been shot with a cannon, with a cannonball. And it's hard to not react to that and to blow the whistle on it. And you can say, I want those calls, but you're probably not going to have the awareness and the body control in those moments to do the fake whiplash thing.
Yeah, that is something that you have to really commit to.
Yeah.
To do it all the time.
Chalmers does it badly. Chalmers flops, but he doesn't have the body control to flop properly, so it just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, it looks really forced. Do you think the referees should know the reputations of these guys, or should they just not pay attention to the league at all and just try to do their jobs blindly?
Oh, that's a great question, because you don't want them going in there with biases.
Yeah, man. Right? I mean, I feel like if you went in and they say, all right, James Harden, you know, he flops a lot, so we got to watch this, there is some kind of like preconceived notion that maybe puts them in some kind of like gray area that's not comfortable.
I think they were in that area in the 2012 finals, where it seemed like the refs were acutely aware that James Harden tries to sell contact, and they were having none of it. That is a really good question, and I don't know how to answer it. I ideally would like them to know what we know about which players do this and what their tendencies are, but it's probably better if they go in with a clean slate and with that approach to the game. Here's another hypothetical question based on last night. Kevin Durant, really angry out there.
And yeah, he seems upset.
Got a technical foul, and he was doing everything in his power almost to get that second tech, but they weren't going to give it to him because it's Kevin Durant
right.
And it's national TV. And I feel like I endorse that and I like that and I want Kevin Durant to stay in the game. But my question to you is, at what point do you call that second tech? At what point are you okay with that happening? And when do you think it should happen?
I think if he's keeping up the same level of anger and the way he's approaching it, I think you stick, like, that's fine, you allow that. If he starts ratcheting up how aggressive he is in complaining, then I think you have to give him, like, tell him, like, look, you got to cut it out or you're going to be out of this game. And then if he goes beyond that, then you say, all right, you're gone. Like, there's only so much you should take, right?
It's bizarre to see, because the assumption would be, hey, if I was Kevin Durant, I would just be walking on cloud nine. There would be nothing better than to be on a basketball court and to be Kevin Durant. Oh, my God, it would be so wonderful. That's your assumption. And this guy who plays basketball so effortlessly, it's not too early to start drinking.
No, it's 9 a.m. somewhere.
Yeah, you know, it's 9 a.m. somewhere. No, but he plays basketball so beautifully, and off the court, he just politically is almost impeccable with how he handles situations. It's bizarre that he is so often angry out there and he's so often frustrated, and I wonder why. What is that? Is this something that he feels like he needs to do? Is it a new image, the way you want to be a fiery competitor, or is he really frustrated with the supposed lack of pieces around him?
Oh, why is look he so at mad? You. Look at you. You will not let a podcast go without taking a shot at Sam Presti.
No, this is Sam Presti's moment, man. Steven Adams looks fantastic. Jeremy Lamb's been playing well. I'm not saying that. Other people have said this. Other people have interpreted it this way. This is not coming from me. I don't think it's that. I don't think he thinks, I'm so mad over the lack of help and I'm raging. I'm just throwing out possibilities there.
Yeah. Well, he talked about it last year, or we talked about this offseason heading into the year, about how last year he got so worried about not winning a championship that he kind of overreacted to every little thing and that he wasn't going to do that this year. But maybe he just slipped back into it. Maybe he got out on the court and Westbrook wasn't out there. And then when Westbrook came back, you know, Jeremy Lamb's not that good or, you know, Serge is inconsistent or something, you know, whatever the problem is he noticed it. He's like, no, I should be worried. Like I need to do as much as I can to get this team to win. And so maybe he just slipped back into it. I don't know.
It makes you wonder if this guy who plays a brand of basketball that makes basketball look so fun, if he's even having fun out there, if what he derives from it is only pride and the satisfaction that comes from winning, and the actual process of being out there on the court isn't particularly enjoyable to him, because it looks like going about it that way, it looks as though he's not enjoying himself. He celebrates right. Some things, but it's mostly anger out there. So it's just curious. I'm not even criticizing it. It's just interesting to me that that's how he goes about it.
Do you want to play a game here?
Oh yeah, sure.
It's a blind player game. All right.
Oh, okay.
So I've got two guys. One guy averages 2.4 points fewer than the other guy, but takes 3.5 fewer shots. He has a 37.9 field goal percentage. Not good, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other guy has a 38.6. Not good.
Yeah.
The guy who averages fewer points is shooting 2% better on three-pointers, and he's averaging 1.7 more assists per game. He has a PER that's higher. He has a true shooting percentage that's higher, and his win shares per 48 are higher. Which guy do you want on your team?
I've lost track. I tried to listen.
So basically, what I'm saying,
there's a lot of imaginary players and different imaginary unnamed statistics.
Yeah,
it was very difficult to keep track.
What
of.
I'm saying is,
I guess I'll play the game. I'll play the game.
Okay.
I want the guy with the better efficiency and the win shares and the PER.
Okay. Then you just pick John Wall over Kyrie Irving this year.
Oh.
Look at that.
Ah, that's getting interesting.
I thought we were playing that smugness game. So I finally had that.
So the background for your legion of listeners, the background on this is that I said Kyrie Irving would be better than John Wall and Ivory Irving. When Ivory Irving was coming out of college, I said he'd be better than John Wall, and I looked incredibly correct. I might have crowed a little bit.
Oh, you crowed. You crowed indeed, because I challenged you on that one, and I had no crow to give.
I might have puffed my chest out.
Yeah.
But at this juncture, hey, man, I don't know. I can't call it.
No, I think you still take Kyrie, right? He's not going to play this poorly for very long.
Yeah, he's had an awful start to the season. It's not like John Wall's had a great start to the season either.
He clearly not.
Yeah. it's just that you know that Wall is going to at least give you better defense. Now, the thing I worry about with Wall is the thing I worry about with a lot of great, quick point guards. Can you support a top-flight offense if you can't shoot? And are you going to shoot down the road? Now, it's looking like Waller did last year in that glorious 2 months that he could improve upon that shot. But I don't know if he will.
What's interesting is he's shooting 35% from three-point range, which is a little below league average. Like, if a guy's shooting 35%,
Hasn't he made two fewer three-pointers already than he did all of last year?
He's taking four a game, which is weird. Like, he's actually matched the number of threes he made last year already this year in 11 fewer attempts.
Yeah, it's I like that approach. So that gives me – that alone makes me more positive about the trajectory of one John Wall. But gun to my head, and again, I don't know why somebody would put a gun to my head.
Aggressive. It seems unnecessarily aggressive. Someone says, gun to your head.
Something predictive where I could just say anything. It's like, well, I'm going to come back and shoot you 5 years from now.
If people say gun to your head, you know, who do you pick? I'm just like, put the gun down. I will make a decision. You don't need to like threaten my life at all.
Speaking of which, you like to be above the fray. You like to
what?
With your smugness, with your condescension. You like
what
to
is,
look down at everybody.
What is
who's
this? What are these accusations?
Jabari over Wiggins, or you know, arguing Randall over everybody. I want your opinions on this. I want your rankings, Zach. I want your rankings of those three prospects. As opposed to sneering at those who argue for one over the other and, you know, do the Highlander, there can be only one thing. I want your ranking on it.
I mean, based on the huge amount of evidence we have after two games.
Big sample size.
Huge sample size. I like Parker's game the most, I think. I think in terms of like a player who I'd want now, I would take Parker. A player that I want long term, I'd probably take Wiggins. And a player that's just the safest pick, I'd probably say Randall.
See, I don't know if Randall's the safest pick, and we need to see more of them. I'm just doing it totally based off the kinds of players that Randall reminds me of, where do you want a scoring power forward? Is that really going to elevate your team? I feel as though in a draft, what you're looking for, the ideal with a number one pick, you want a wing who can handle, because that's a fairly rare commodity, a wing who can create offense and handle, or a big man who can really guard and who can protect the basket. Those are the two rare commodities you're looking for. I'm not sure what you're looking for is a scoring power forward where you don't exactly know if he's going to dramatically help your defense.
Yeah, I think it's just so hard. Like, all these guys... Well, that's the thing I like about Parker, is that his game really isn't that raw. Like, I could see it not getting all that much better, but still being really good.
Oh, yeah, he looks great.
Yeah, he looks polished. His moves are really good. His footwork's fantastic. His comfort with the ball seems just incredible for his age. And that's the thing about Wiggins, is Wiggins doesn't look comfortable with the ball yet, which I actually don't mind, because I think that his presence on the court is so like just looks so good in the small sample size that I think that comfort will come as he plays more.
He's got a lightness. He's just got a lightness where it seems as though there are coils in his legs.
Yeah,
that.
Well, he's supposed to be like a power forward, right? Like that's what he's going to project to. Like I guess a 3-4 combo, but he can't shoot, and so he's not a stretch four. I'm coming up with a new term. He's an up four.
An up four.
Yeah, because his entire game is above the rim. So I think that he's a slight four,
Is Michael Kidd-Gilchrist an up four?
He's an up three.
An up three?
Yeah, he's an up three. But Andrew Wiggins is an up four, and I think that that's going to be a good thing for him.
Maybe
Blake Griffin was an up four. Yeah, he was probably definitely an up four.
That's the prototypical up four right there. But that's the question though. Do you want a power forward like Blake Griffin? See, I see Blake Griffin as similar to Randall. All things being equal, it's good to have that.
Yeah, but, I mean, we criticize Blake Griffin so much. I look at him, I'm like, Jesus, if the Wolves didn't have Kevin Love, I would want that guy on my team so badly.
They should just rename Inside the NBA as the Dwight Howard and Blake Griffin snuff film. It's still going with it, you know? Still
it went last night. Blake didn't even play. He got thrown under the bus. I actually did like that segment, though. Of Barkley teaching how to post up and where you want to do it, because it seemed very basic and simple, but it's important, right?
Space Jam had a few scenes like that.
You could have sat through it another time. With them, like, I actually liked the information that Shaq and Barkley put out about that. It wasn't just these guys suck, they wouldn't be able to hang in our day. It was this is what you have to do, and this is why it's important. And I actually think that what they said works in today's NBA, because when you are posting up 2 or 3 feet farther out, that does allow the zone to set up a little bit. But if you get deep post position and you attack right away, then maybe you would be more dominant. So as much as the criticism was weird, I mean, Dwight, it made sense because he played, but Blake got thrown out there for no reason.
The Rockets and the Clippers are on national TV more than once a game. They're on national TV 130% of the time, right? I think is the advanced stat on that.
Right.
So it's partially not their fault. It's just sort of in their consciousness. I just feel like the post up from the big is overrated, and the post up from the wing and perimeter players is underrated. That confuses a defense almost more, because you've got players guarding that position who don't really know how to guard posting up.
Sure.
And you're also bringing the exterior into the interior and causing all kinds of problems, as opposed to the more traditional approach, which is posting up your bigs.
Actually, that's one of my favorite things that the Wolves have done this year, is they post up Kevin Martin a decent amount, and he's really good at it.
Oh God, he must draw so many stupid fouls. He
draws some of the worst foul calls, and it just and Wolves fans were really upset about that Clippers game, the way it was officiated, and the entire time I was just thinking, I understand that it looks bad, but I think there's a net positive here for the Wolves, like, just on the season. Between him and Love, and then Nikola Pekovic being allowed to just hang out in the key whenever he wants to, there's just so many rule violations they get away with.
This is how they're going to do it, man. They're going to get that matchup, let's say, against the Thunder in the playoffs.
You claim I want to be above the fray. They want to be above the rule book.
Yes, and they're succeeding, you know.
They are.
They're doing a great job, and this is how it's going to happen. They don't have enough talent to, say, beat the Thunder in a playoff series.
Right.
But they do have enough talent if they have one of those historic, make the other team blow up and get in a fight and people run off the bench and there are suspensions. They could definitely pull a Spurs to the Phoenix Suns in a series against a more talented team in the playoffs. I say look for that.
Wait, do they not have enough talent to beat the Thunder in a playoff series?
I'm not even sure about that. I don't know, because
I mean, they've been good on defense.
They don't have the right pieces to be good on defense in theory, but they've been good on defense.
Yeah,
so far,
I don't know if it'll hold, but they're like, I don't know, 6th or 7th or something like that. I doubt it'll hold, but yeah, they have been good. The Thunder are Dolly Parton, like, they're just top heavy. they got two big guns, and then everything else below it is just really
good. They were good at singing.
Yeah, no, they have what is it, Dollywood, Dollyland, yes. Dollywood, yeah. That's what they should rename the Chesapeake Bay And
which, if they moved it to Oklahoma City, would be the number one attraction and thing to do. It's out of love.
I don't even know where. I don't know what we were talking about.
Oh, it's okay. You're talking about how top heavy the Thunder are, and if they could win a hypothetical, or if they could lose a hypothetical matchup against your Minnesota Timberwolves.
I would pick the Thunder to win because they're Dolly Parton, but I don't know that. I mean, what does that make the Wolves? That makes the Wolves.
Anna Kendrick. I don't know.
No, come on.
Female actress. I was just reaching there. Is there so obviously a Sandra Bullock, the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Yeah, are. That's actually a great call. They are Sandra Bullock. Oh, that just depressed me.
Who's Tara Reid, since you're such a Tara Reid expert? Which
the
team
Knicks.
Is the Knicks are,
the
oh.
Knicks are definitely Tara Reid.
Oh, man. See, I always see the Knicks as more of Amanda Bynes or...
Oh, okay. Maybe the Knicks are Miley Cyrus.
Oh, going for the attention.
You make the Lakers just... Tara Reid?
I could see it. But
Kobe coming back is like the next installment in the American Pie series. It's just like, hey, just wait for this to come back. Like, we'll wait for American Pie, like, you know, menopause to come out and then...
American Pie, the movie series, is just so sentimental. It's almost as though it thinks it had some sort of impact.
It didn't. That was huge on the youth when it came out.
Well, it did create, I won't use the term here, it did introduce a new word to the lexicon, and not many movies can claim that, of just introducing a new word that people would use from there ever after.
And that word is clearly the Shermanator.
That word is clear. No, it starts with an M and ends with an ILF. But yes, it does have that claim to fame.
Yeah,
but...
I would say the Lakers are Tara Reid. Who would be Amanda? I feel like the Pistons are Amanda Bynes.
Oh, dude, the Pistons. I have to go soon, but I should talk a little Pistons. What are they doing?
They're amusing us. That's what they're doing.
Chauncey Billups is the starting shooting guard of this team. Josh Smith is the starting small forward. What? Whose idea was this?
It's kind of... I mean, we joked about, oh, you're going to have to watch them on League Pass. No, you really do have to watch them on League Pass.
Dude, So they played the Warriors recently, and I was in their locker room in the pregame, and I probably shouldn't be dishing but they were dishing's appropriate because they were just pigging out in junk food before the game, like an hour before, and how the gate looking like it. And just, who's running what?
Where's the nutritionist there?
What's going on?
I will tell what we can end on something like this. I will tell one story from the locker room recently that isn't a big deal, but I found it very funny. A writer that I talked to a lot at games told Nikola
McPherson.
Right, Steve McPherson. No, told Nikola Pekovic after the blowout victory over the Cavs, he was like, you know, you really should have your own reality show. And he was like, what? He's like, why? Who would watch that? He's like, a lot of people will watch that. He's like, you would make a lot of money off that. And Peck just calmly like fired back. He's like, I make a lot of money now. It was great.
Ah, oh, God, it sucks to be a reporter sometimes.
That comment alone was like, that's worth $60 million over 5 years. I'll take that. I'll take a couple of those each season.
Are you a little worried about that contract? Because you defended that contract.
Oh,
are
no, no. Worried? No, he's been good the last three games.
He has. Yeah. I'm just wondering. I'm just taking
And his defense time. Has been good all year, so I'm fine with it.
So can you tell me why they've been good at defense? Is it random? Is it Rubio? Is Rubio the Roy Hibbert of point guard defense?
Rubio is... He's a really good defender. I mean, it still drives me nuts that I get comments of, hey, this team, like the Warriors broadcast team, or their studio team, not the broadcast team, but their studio team, talked about how Rubio's not a good defender.
That was like, just me whispering in their ear.
It's like, what are you watching? He's so clearly like one of the best defensive point guards in the league. Yeah, he can't shoot a lick, but he's one of the best defensive point guards in the league. And I don't know how you can come to that conclusion by watching
him. It's easy. It's just everybody says that blank point guard is bad at defense, and you can't really prove it wrong.
And especially blank European point guard.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah. And it's like, do a little research.
He's not above the rim player, too. If Rubio's not throwing down all kinds of dunks, then it's just obviously not enough athleticism. Yeah. He must be terrible, and I care about defense. And here's something I want from people. This is a new rule. A new rule.
Oh, look at you getting your Bill Maher on.
Yeah, getting the Bill Maher on, you know, in so far as I can, since I canceled HBO and watch, you know, illegal downloads of it. But I can still do this. My new rule is, if you say that someone is bad at defense, or if you say that a team played bad defensively, you have to explain how.
Okay.
You have to explain how and why.
I like that.
This drives me crazy, where in this recent game between the Thunder and the Warriors, where because the score was really high and there were a lot of possessions and it was fast-paced, it was just not a lot of defense in this one, and I'm thinking, both teams were making ridiculous shots. I don't know what you would have wanted them to do. I suppose there were individual things. I think the Warriors left the Thunder open for a few corner threes, and that wasn't good.
Sure.
And but I couldn't even really think of how the Thunder screwed up. Thabo Sefolosha doesn't – I've mentioned him 80 times on this podcast. I don't know why. I just like saying that name. I like saying that name. It helps me prove that I'm not drinking at 9 a.m. when I'm mispronouncing these other things.
Sure.
I can clearly say Thabo Sefolosha. But he's just brilliant to watch on defense, and especially in transition, he's communicating to everybody. And they did a great job limiting the Warriors' three-point opportunities, but the shots just went in. You know, these heavily guarded shots just went in. And I would like people to explain the how of it, because it's just so easy to look at the score or to look at somebody who in your biased mind looks like a quote-unquote bad defender and say bad at defense. I think it would reveal a lot of people's opinions as fraudulent if they had to actually explain how. That would be interesting.
I agree with that, and I think that sometimes good offense just beats good defense. Like, consistently. Yeah. Like, so there are just those games where you're
Westbrook pull up three.
Right, exactly. Like, that was amazing. I still wish they had won on that. But yeah, sometimes good offense just beats good defense in a game throughout the entire game. Like, you have those nights, and yeah, I agree with that. It's some explanation. Just to finish up that point, to explain why the Wolves are good on defense this year. Short answer is I don't really know. But the long answer is Rubio's defense at the top has been great. Brewer has been really measured in how he defends. Love has been in position most of the time. Peck is in position almost all the time. And David Thorpe once said this. He said, sometimes good defense is just getting in the way.
Yeah.
That's paraphrasing. That's basically what he said. And the T-Wolves are just in the way right now.
Love has been in position sounds like some sort of Kama Sutra thing. I don't know about that. But other than that, that all sounds very, very sound. I wish he had some sort of hot take that Rubio was the Roy Hibbert of point guard defense. I would have jumped all over that.
Okay.
I'm interested in your theories about Eric Bledsoe versus Rubio, because you were having that passionate argument. I should walk away, but I can't, Zach. I love this podcast. I love being on.
Oh, testimonials are left and right being thrown our way.
Yeah.
No, Eric Bledsoe's really good. We have friendly Clipper fan friends that that we converse with on occasion.
Yeah,
and they're very high on the Bledsoe. I just think it's a shame that they have to watch him have a quote unquote breakout year while hurting a playoff team in the Suns. Because the Suns are worse with him. The Suns are a negative with him on the court, and they're like a plus 18 per 100 possessions with him off the court. And I just feel bad. I feel bad for those Bledsoe capers.
The real Roy Hibbert of point guard defense, Eric Bledsoe.
I thought he was a mini LeBron. We got to figure out what he is.
He's a mini guy who's friends with LeBron, and it's controversial.
He's got that. I don't know. Maybe he's like a Kanye West of Avery Bradley.
We'll end on that.
That Ethan, we can follow you on Twitter at Sherwood Strauss. And it's always a pleasure. This time was a little less of a pleasure.
Aww,
I gotta be honest.
That hurts. I'm sorry I couldn't be Dave Chappelle, Zach.
That's the thing. I just had a great comedian talking to me for an hour. You were good. You know what? You weren't great.
I'll come back better next time.
All right.
I'll work on it.
Thanks, Ethan.
Thanks, Zach.